If it's Thursday, 6 p.m., that means it's time for Perspectives by John Pierce. Our topic this evening is, would you believe it, women spies et al. We're going to do something besides just the spies, right? My guest is Elisa Dupuy, who impersonates many different kinds of women. And for this evening's broadcast, she is going to impersonate first Vera Atkins and then Elizabeth Van Loo to begin. And then we have some surprises later on. So first, I want to mention that Elisa Dupuy has created the Ladies of History. And that's what got you into the impersonation business, right?
Yes, I actually started in tea rooms at the request of a friend who was doing a tea, and she asked for me to give a lecture, a talk, and I said, about what? And she said, how about Paris in the 19th century? And that kind of started the whole thing off, and then Martha Washington was actually my first person that I portrayed. And of course, that's important because we have the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence
coming
up. She
was the first lady.
Yes, yes. So 2026 is an important year for America, and I think that's going to be an exciting year.
Yes, it will be. So excuse me for interrupting here, Elisa, but Vera Atkins has entered the room, and I must ask you, Vera, what was your role during World War II?
It's so nice to be here, John. Thank you so much for inviting me. Yes, my name is Vera Atkins. I was an intelligence officer during World War II, and I worked for the Special Operations Executive, the SOE. And my job, because you perhaps know that the SOE trained British civilians to be parachuted into France, and it was all about infiltration, sabotage, resistance. And so these civilians were to parachute in and connect with French civilians and those already in the French resistance. And my job was to recruit those recruiters. I met them at parties, through friends of friends. I never let them know what I was about, but I did make note of those whom I thought might make good agents.
Yes, and who was chosen to be a spy?
There were many. We had an incredible network made up of playwrights and bankers, shop girls, taxi cab drivers. We even had an Indian princess. And
wow.
One of the most important people for me was actually an American.
Oh, interesting. Now, in your opinion, who was the greatest female spy under your purview?
Well, I would have to say it was that American, and her name was Virginia Hall. She was not only a spy for the SOE during the war, but she also then went to work for the OSS, which, of course, you probably know. And when the OSS transitioned to the CIA, she also went to work for them. And I considered her the greatest of all Allied spies. And that's in my modest opinion, which, of course, isn't modest at all, since I am always right about everything.
what made her so special, would you say?
Well, she was extremely devoted. She was very discreet. She became a mistress of disguise. In fact, during the war, the Gestapo considered her to be the most dangerous of all Allied spies. And she led resistance. She was undercover, but she also created different disguises. And under her, the circuits that we had created did various acts of sabotage and resistance. She sent, as a wireless operator, which we later trained her to do, she sent over 37 messages of vital importance to the Allies. She organized and received 22 parachute drops.
Now, this is Virginia.
This is Virginia Hall, yes.
Oh.
And she and her group killed over 170 Nazis and took 800 more prisoner. So she was quite incredible.
Yes, indeed. And probably a name that our listeners are not familiar with. That's not a household name, Virginia Hall.
I think it's becoming a little bit more known. If people are interested in her story, there are books such as The Wolves at the Door. There's also a film called A Call to Spy, and that's all about Virginia Hall.
Oh.
And the SOE, and then, of course, the OSS.
Yeah, well, those of you who are interested in spying, there are some tips for where you can go. Who were some of the other women who worked for the OSS?
So, I think probably the most famous one that everyone would know, well, there are two, I would say two, perhaps, would be Marlene Dietrich.
Oh, yes.
Yes, she recorded songs in German for the OSS in what was called the Morale Operations Branch. And then probably the other most famous one would be Julia Child.
Oh.
Yes, she wanted to join either the WAX or the WAVES, but she was famously too tall for the uniforms.
Oh, that's interesting. She
joined the OSS initially in a secretarial capacity, but her abilities were quickly noticed. And she actually worked under William Donovan, who was the head of the OSS, Bill Donovan. And she was working on research and development of a shark repellent that they wanted to float in the waters around ordnance that had been set in American waters to fend off German U-boats. And then she was in charge of funneling a huge amount of highly classified information when she was transferred to Ceylon, Sri Lanka. She also met her future husband, Paul Child, who was also an OSS operative. And later they were stationed in Paris, and she attended a cooking class there, and of course, with the results that we know.
The rest is history.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Julia Child as part of the spy network.
Yes, she was.
And she was so tall, such a big woman, that you would think a spy might be real small. And
well, she wasn't.
Able
she
to
wasn't
sneak
on
around.
The front lines, so to speak.
Yeah.
She wasn't going in disguise and. Yeah. Blowing up things.
Okay.
She didn't do any of that, but would have been interesting
yes,
to
indeed.
See.
Sorry to cut you off, Vera, but Elizabeth Van Loo has entered the room. And Elizabeth, I guess you were Southern.
Yes, I am. My name is Elizabeth Van Loo, and I talk about on a regular basis, that critical time in our nation's history known as the Civil War, or the War Between the States, or to my mind, the War of Secession. And from the time I knew right from wrong, it was my sad privilege to differ in many things from the perceived opinions in my locality, slavery and preserving the Union being the most important of these. And so, when the war broke out, my mother and I, who felt just as I did, we decided that we were going to support the Union. It
oh,
was not a well-received opinion.
Wow. And what state were you in?
I was born in Richmond, Virginia.
In Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but you were not in favor of slavery.
No. My mother, well, both my parents were Northerners. But my father knew, as a Southern family, the only three things that could get us to be accepted by the high society would be family connections, which we had because my mother's father had been a mayor of Philadelphia for 3 years. He'd been a hero of the American Revolution. He was also a prominent member of Pennsylvania's Abolition Society. And the other thing was fortune, which my father had because he was a successful hardware merchant, and then owning slaves. Unfortunately, my mother and I were very much against it, but you know how society was at that time. It was the man who made the decisions. Now, when my father died, he left all of our slaves in his will to my mother with a provision stating that she could not sell them because he knew exactly what she would do.
He knew that she would, free them.
Exactly. So there were laws in the state at that time. And if you did free your slaves, they were not allowed to stay in the state past 1 year. So my mother and I tried to find sort of secret ways that we could sort of free the slaves, but they would work in town. It was called hiring out. And in this way, they were able to stay on in Richmond because we didn't want them to have to break up their families or not be able to see family members. And we also wanted to be able to be close by so we could take care of them in that time. And many chose to stay on with us. And that was a very important aspect of my spiring. They were very helpful in all of the activities that my mother and I did, from passing information to secreting Union soldiers out of the Confederacy. And I could not have done all that I did without having my people around.
Interesting. Do you know, was the one-year rule that the slaves are free, but they must leave the state?
Yes, they could not stay in Virginia at
that
time. Was that
for every state, or was that Virginia?
There were several states that had similar laws. I'm not aware of all of them, but yeah. I know that that was one. So it made it difficult if you wanted to free your slaves, because you knew they would have to leave husbands and wives and children and parents, and that's right. A terrible thing. And some did, of course, and yeah. That's very unfortunate. But I'll be honest with you, we hoped, my mother and I, that gradual emancipation would happen. Unfortunately, it didn't. We had a violent solution to the problem.
Yes, indeed.
And my mother and I were very interested in keeping the Union together as well, preserving the Union. And that's why I became a spy for the Union. And I don't know how they can call me a spy serving in my own country within its recognized borders. I wish I could just simply be remembered as a patriot like my grandfather.
A patriot, yes. And very much on the side of President Lincoln.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, and also Ulysses S. Grant, who came for tea with Mother and I when they finally broke into Richmond.
Oh.
And I have to tell you, my mother and I were viewed as traitors to the cause. And just before Grant came to Richmond, there was a mob that gathered outside our home with the intention of burning our house to the ground. And I looked into that mob, and I met them in their eyes, and I said, I know you, and I know you, and I know you.
And you really did know them as individuals.
And I did know them as individuals. And I said, if you touch our house, General Grant will be here soon, and he will burn yours to the ground. And finally, the crowd did dissipate.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. But it was a very dangerous time.
Yes, indeed. What happened to you after the war?
So after the war, General Grant, who became president, Ulysses S. Grant, made me a postmaster. And I did ask to be made postmaster and not postmistress. And I made about $4,000 a year doing that, which
was good money in those days.
Very good money. Yes, it was. Very good money. And my mother and I decided to stay on in Richmond, and I've been asked about that. But it was our home, and my father had created a life for us there, and so I did my best to pay the taxes on the property. We used our money to help others, and I actually ended up dying in poverty.
Oh.
Yes. So it was a sad ending, and I tell you, when my mother died, we didn't have friends enough to serve as pallbearers. Many of my former slaves had stayed on with us,
so it was
difficult. I died at home in 1900, and I'm buried in Richmond's Shaco Hill Cemetery. And you might be interested to know that the inscription on my headstone reads, "She risked everything that is dear to man, friends, fortune, comfort, health, life itself, all for the one absorbing desire of her heart, that slavery might be abolished and the Union preserved." That tombstone was a gift from the family of Colonel Paul Revere, who was one of the many escaped prisoners that I harbored in my home during the war. And he was the grandson of Revolutionary War hero Paul Revere, who I'm sure you know.
Yes, indeed. You've just been listening to Elizabeth Van Loo, a Southerner who was not in favor of slavery. I think it's important to get that word out. Listeners, stay with us. Our engineer this evening is James Zibrot, and he is going to cut us off right now. And we'll be back, though, in just a minute.
For the past three decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
And while you were away, listeners, Mrs. Eliza Hamilton entered the room, and she's going to talk to us about her husband, Alexander.
Yes, well, good afternoon, Mr. Pierce. My name is Elizabeth Schuyler Hamilton, and I am so pleased to be here today. As you know, my husband is Alexander Hamilton, and we met in 1780 when the Continental Army was in winter quarters in Morristown, New Jersey. My parents had sent me there because I was 22 years old and I hadn't found a husband yet. And they sent me to stay with my aunt and my uncle. And I could only assume that it was because that was where the Army was stationed and they hoped I'd find myself a husband, and I did. So we were married at the end of the year and had a lovely family.
So you had a very short courtship.
Oh, very short, yes.
Only a few months.
Yes, but he came to the pastures in Albany, New York. It was a home. That was our home, the name of our home that my mother had actually designed. My parents were General Philip Schuyler and Catherine Van Rensselaer. My father was considered an important man because he had fought in the French and Indian War. He had fought well. And so when the colonies finally rose up in rebellion, he joined the Sons of Liberty, if you've heard of that, and became the general of the Northern Army under George Washington, as well as a spy master for the cause. Did you know my father was a spy during the Revolution?
I did not know that.
Yes, and my sisters and I became his eyes and ears. There's a thin line, I should say, between local gossip and military intelligence. So while we never really thought of ourselves as spies, I guess we were to some degree. And my father also had a high-ranking Mohawk mistress named Mary Hill, who was supposed to be on our side, but she betrayed my father and gave intelligence to the British. Just like Peggy Shippen, who was married to Benedict Arnold, the traitor.
Oh.
Yes. She was Tench Tillman's cousin. So we were also interconnected at that time.
Oh.
It was an amazing and exciting but scary time to be alive.
Yes, I'm kind of surprised that Alexander Hamilton had time to go dating and have a courtship and get married during this tumultuous time.
I know. It was, well, he was very young when the war first started. The first outbreaks, of course, were the first battles were in 1775, and then the signing of the Declaration in 1776. I think he was only 21 at that time. And so he was about 25 when I met him.
Right.
And during winter quarters, there were balls, there were dances, there were plays performed, because neither army was fighting usually at that time. Yeah. Not always, but.
Yes. Interesting. Was there ever a time when you feared for your life during the war?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My husband was an aide-de-camp to General Washington, and they actually got in a little argument because Alexander wanted to lead men into battle, and Washington felt he just couldn't be without Alexander. He was so helpful to him, sort of his right-hand man. And it really wasn't resolved until Washington did finally let him lead troops for the Battle of Yorktown. And he was thrilled that he was able to fulfill his desire for battlefield glory. But I wasn't so thrilled because about a month before his brush with death, my family had a
near-death experience, because what had happened was, in retaliation for the hanging of Major John André, who was the officer, the British officer who was involved with Benedict Arnold, and he'd been caught, which was how we knew that Benedict Arnold was about ready to give up West Point to the British. I was expecting a child. So was my sister, Angelica. And so we were staying with our mother, who had actually just given birth to her last child, who was my littlest sister, Catherine. And men, in retaliation for the hanging of Major André, they attacked our house, hoping to either kill or kidnap my father. And our guards didn't have their guns readily accessible because Angelica had moved them out of reach of the children. And some quick thinking on my sister Peggy's part actually saved the day. She was caught by one of the attackers and pretended to be a servant, claiming that my father was on his way back with reinforcements. And this scared them, so they ran off. They took our guards with them as captives. They stole the family silver. And it was very, very scary. I was definitely ready for the war to be over at that point.
Yeah, it makes sense. And our final guest this evening is Madame Lafayette. Yes, the same Lafayette family for which Lafayette College is named. So, Madame Lafayette, could you explain to our listeners why you chose to come visit us this year?
Oui, bonsoir. Je suis très contente d'être parmi vous.
Très bien.
Oh, but I must practice my English, of course. My name is Adrienne de Lafayette, and my husband is Gilbert Dumotier, Marquis de Lafayette. But here in his adopted country of America, I think you know him well as General Lafayette.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, he is considered by many, and was called, actually during his lifetime, the hero of two worlds. And the reason I come to you is because in 1824, your kind president, Mr. James Monroe, invited Gilbert to return here and visit all 24 states that you had at that time. And as you mentioned, Lafayette College was named for Gilbert. Many places around the country were named for him at that time.
Yes, indeed.
And for 13 months, he toured this magnificent land of freedom. And this year, we are celebrating the bicentennial of this farewell tour when Gilbert was hailed as the nation's guest. And I have come to America to tell everyone about my wonderful husband, who was so important in the history not only of America, but also Europe and France. Of course, you know about the French Revolution. He was very involved with this. That is why I come, because this year and next is the bicentennial of his visit.
Well, it's really a pleasure to have you. And, of course, we've had these strong ties between France and the U.S. all the time that since our revolution here on these shores.
Absolutely, and much of it is due to my husband. And if it had not been for him, I'm not sure that the French would have agreed, because he became a hero of the Battle of Brandywine on September 11th, 1777. And from there, he just became very important to the American Revolution.
Yes, and a great friend of George Washington.
He was like an adopted son.
Yes.
He considered Washington like an adopted father to him. And you perhaps know that we are buried together in Picpus Cemetery in Paris, which my sister and I founded after we discovered that our grandmother, our mother, and our sister Louise had all been guillotined and their bodies had been thrown into a mass grave. Yes, he was. I was only spared this from the intervention of Americans, Mr. Morris and James Monroe and his wife, Elizabeth Monroe. So we founded this cemetery, and an American flag is always flown above our graves, and it is changed every year. And 140 years after my husband, Lafayette, first spilled his blood for American liberty, in July of 1917, when America helped to liberate France during World War I, General Pershing, his staff, and soldiers
arrived at Picpus Cemetery, and one Colonel Stanton said, "Lafayette, we are here."
Oh,
yes,
that's touching.
And one other thing I would like to tell you is that Gilbert lies beside me beneath a French tomb, but buried in American soil that he brought back from Bunker Hill in 1825.
Whoa.
And so he remains the hero of two worlds.
Great story. A symbol of the friendship between France and les États-Unis.
Exactement.
This brings us almost to the end today, folks, of Perspectives. But I do want Elisa Dupuy, who is this fantastic talent who impersonates so many different people, to tell you about a new project she has going.
Yes, it is called George Martha Washington 250.com. And I am working with a George Washington impersonator by the name of Kurt Radebaugh. And of course, I myself have been impersonating Martha Washington since 2009. We have joined forces to prepare a show, George and Martha, a Love Story, that will explore George and Martha's relationship, how they met, what happened to them during the war, the contributions of not only Washington, but also of his wife, which are actually quite important. And we have a website. We are starting to do events this month leading up to 2025 and 2026, which, of course, the war started in 1775. And then the Declaration of Independence was signed. And I'm sure you remember the bicentennial.
Absolutely.
In 1976.
Oh, yeah, big deal.
Yes, very big deal. I was 10 at the time, and it was really, I think, the event that made me love history so much.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yes, goes way back then.
Yeah.
So the organization, again, is called?
Our website is George Martha Washington 250.com.
All right.
And that's in honor of the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration.
The numerals 250.
Yes, the numerals 250.com. Yeah.
And Elisa Dupuy is also the creator of Ladies of History.
Yes, I can be found at theladiesofhistory.com. You'll see that I have lots of shows, lots of women that I portray, and it's so much fun. I love the costuming. I love learning all the history. And right. I find connections all over the place. It's amazing how many connections you can find.
And you told me one time, I got a kick out of this, that you do not portray tall women.
I try to avoid it, yes.
You avoid it because you want it to be as authentic as possible. And listeners, if you ever get a chance to see Elisa Dupuy in person or possibly on Zoom, and we should put in a plug here for the library.
Plainfield
Library in New Jersey, because every once in a while you appear there, and that's how I first saw you and invited you to come to WDIY.
Mm-hmm.
So it's well worth your time. We're coming to the last couple of minutes. Elisa Dupuy, if you were to, did you ever count up how many different people you impersonate?
Well, I think I'm over 30 at this point. I think maybe 35.
And you have a script written out for each one.
Yes, I do all my own research.
Do your own research. Mm-hmm. Wow. You just love history.
I do.
Yeah.
I really do.
And you are a former teacher of French.
Mm-hmm.
And professor of French?
Yes, I actually worked as an adjunct professor at Lafayette College.
Right. It's a varied life, so many different activities that you do, and you have fun doing it.
I do. I have so much fun. I loved teaching when I was doing it. I taught 27 years in Princeton public schools, and then, of course, a year at Lafayette College. But I was ready to retire and to do this full time. Which has been a lovely experience.
Yes, because what you're doing is education with entertainment.
Exactly. And I think it's important, too, because I try to call attention to women's contributions and the contributions of some minorities that have perhaps been left out of the historical record in what we would normally learn in school. I think that's changing now for the better.
Yes.
And also to get young people excited about American history. If I can do anything during 2025, 2026 to spark a love of history, a love of our country, patriotism in any young person like I experienced back in 1976, then I feel like I did my job.
Your job is done. This is Elisa Dupuy, our guest this evening. Thanks so much for coming back to WDIY.
Thank you for having me. I hope you'll come back again sometime. I would love to.
We'll see. And our engineer this evening, James Zabrot. I'm John Pierce. Thanks so much for tuning in. Until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.